Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today, our guest is gaming attorney Bob Nersessian, Hall of Fame member. Golf Bob Nersessian. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. In your book, The Law for Gamblers, you entitle your chapter on tribal casinos as Indian Gaming, OMG, WTF. The chapter tells gamblers to beware of gambling at Indian casinos because of the protection the U.S. citizens are entitled to are not always honored at tribal casinos. Now, the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut is a tribal casino. And next week, they're opening up what used to be the Hard Rock Casino in Las Vegas. And they're calling it Virgin Casinos, which is an interesting name for a Las Vegas casino. Do you think we should treat this as a tribal casino or just a regular Nevada casino?
My best guess is that this is a sovereign Indian tribe entering into the open American market, and they won't have any sovereign Indian protections in that sense because this is not on tribal land. It is an American transaction within the state of Nevada and within our system of commerce. So I'm pretty sure that the Nevada Gaming Control Board and the Nevada courts and all the other stuff that would apply are going to apply to this casino and its personnel while acting within the state. The difference is they're acting in the state of Nevada. They're not acting on Indian tribal land.
Well, I hope that's right.
Me too. I tried to research it, there may just not be enough information yet, but I can't see how it's going to be any different.
All right.
Well, on the other hand, if it is different, you might start getting a lot of cases coming your way if they start, stealing people's money.
That's what I want to do is go up in front of the Nevada Supreme Court and tilt at another windmill to get something for gamblers while I'm not making any money.
We all have our dreams. All right, next question. Do casinos need to read the Trespass Act in order to legally 86 somebody from the casino?
I don't believe so. I think that comes from the myth of a justice court decision back in the 80s, which seemed to suggest that they had to. The statute, NRS 207.200, is pretty clear. They just have to tell you essentially to vacate the premises and don't come back. Under that statute, I cannot figure out a way where somebody who is an owner or an occupant of a building, in this case a casino, is in any way restrained from giving an effective trespass warning if they merely look at you and say, get out and don't come back. That would be an effective trespass warning.
Can they do it by email or phone call?
As long as it's an owner or an occupant. We're up in the air on one thing here, and this was discussed in the books. There are cases or instances where, for example, if Caesars is if Caesars Entertainment is sending you a letter that says you are no longer welcome at Caesar's Palace or gives you a list of casinos, each of those casinos is ordinarily a separate corporation that is the owner of the property. And Caesar's Entertainment, which is a holding company, and per some of their pleadings have a grand total of no employees, doesn't even have anyone who can give you an effective trespass warning. It may be the question is whether or not the holding company can be the agent of the casino, but that would be backwards. So I have actually litigated this and had courts say, you're absolutely right, this was an ineffective trespass. The holding company giving a trespass warning is not authorized under the statute and therefore not effective. And therefore, the arrest for trespass was a false arrest. Conversely, I have had other judges look at me and go, are you nuts? Caesars doesn't own Caesars? I would suggest that the later judge is wrong because Caesars Entertainment does not own Caesars Palace. And that works across the board for the MGM properties and the others as well. There might be an exception with Coast Casinos because it looks like the holding company or the parent is actually operating each casino as a division.
So the last number of years, Caesars was registered letter happy, sending out, you know, mass 86ings to people via mail. All of that, now that they're El Dorado, is that all just completely a non-issue? It's like a do-over?
That's a very interesting question. Specifically, this is, all right, let me think this through. This is a merger, right? If it's a merger, they would still be Caesars, and whatever the effect was before is no longer the case. If it was a purchase and El Dorado did a purchase of Caesars, then you would need new trespass warnings. If it was based on the letter. If you have an actual trespass from the given property that said, if it's based on the global corporate letter, but still the trespass from Caesars Palace would remain effective because that trespass was given by Desert Palace, not Caesars Entertainment, and El Dorado is now the owner of Desert Palace, the stock, but Desert Palace continues to be the owner of the property where Caesars Palace conducts its business. Isn't that clear as a bell?
It is. And can it be simplified? I mean, you mentioned Caesars Palace specifically. They have 55 other properties. Can we generalize?
I just picked Caesars Palace as an example for the other 55 properties. Caesars Palace has no other properties. They have Caesars Palace. Caesars Entertainment is where the letters are coming from, and they have no casinos. They hold the stock of the entities that own the properties, but they don't own any properties. Again, clear as a bell, huh?
So if a player who had one of those letters goes into the casino and they said, you can't be here. And he said, well, this is a change of owners, so I'm no longer trespassed. What would likely be the result of that?
Well, yes, you are, because we're trespassing you right here and now.
Okay. So they will.
They might call the police and show the police the letter. I would suggest the police would be in error if they looked at that order, at that letter, as effective.
So now, as if it isn't confusing enough, what about if you've been barred from all El Dorado properties and now you enter a Caesars property?
And the barring was before El Dorado owned those properties?
Yes.
Again, each Caesars casino, Harrah's, for example, is owned by a different company than Caesars Entertainment or El Dorado. And that's who can give an effective trespass warning. So to be barred from Harris, the argument goes, Harris has to have told you, you can't come back here. If Caesars Entertainment or El Dorado tells you, you can't go to Harris, that would be ineffective, arguably, because it is not a warning from the owner or occupant.
Okay, I think this is...
We can beat this to death all day long. Yeah. It doesn't change.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is, even if you're not doing something wrong, you may get arrested and they may have to let you go.
You may get arrested and you might have an action for false imprisonment. The action, if the trespass is from the literal property, again, if Harris has told you get out and don't come back, and you are caught in Harris again, the El Dorado Caesars thing should not affect that at all, and you're still trespassed.
Okay, we're going to change subjects.
Good.
A video poker player, is there a legal problem if other people play on the same card?
Well, is there a legal problem? Yes. Because the prosecutors in numerous states, including Nevada, are approaching that as though it's a fraud. There are cases out there that have already been decided that say it's not a fraud, but that doesn't deal with probable cause, and it doesn't deal with whether or not that is finally decided. If you are misrepresenting your identity for the purpose to gain an advantage, there are literally some pretty strong arguments that you are committing a fraud. So yes, it is a legal problem. Yes, it can result in prosecutions. And all of these comp-kiting programs that people are putting together, be it free play or other comps, put everybody at risk. I've been involved in arrests for that, where the charges were subsequently dismissed, but the court held there was probable cause, and that dismissal's not presidential. And with the probable cause, the arrest is legitimate, and you can't sue anybody. So you can find yourself in jail on that with no recourse and probably a 70-30 likelihood that you're going to get the charges dismissed. Doesn't take you out of jail and doesn't give you a cause of action.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but those are cases you do not want, right?
I do not want those cases. I have a personal take on it that might, like I just told you, it seems to me that the elements of fraud can be apparent on the front side. I certainly don't think there's anything that you can overcome the arrest with. Now, the casino, if they seize you for that, if it is not a crime, has committed a false arrest because they... No, they haven't. I'm sorry. They actually have a right to detain you if they suspect a gaming-related / cheating violation. So you don't even have an action against the casino. And if you're playing that program, you are putting yourself at risk every time somebody else is playing on your card or every time you're playing on an alias card that you acquired.
So both parties are at risk. If it's my card and Richard is playing at it on it with my permission and he's caught, we're both at risk?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Except you can always throw me under the bus, Bob, and say, he must have stolen my card. I didn't give it to him.
That would make continuing the podcast a bit awkward.
The same thing.
Well, you were talking over each other. Bob Nersessian, what were you saying?
I'm saying you're in the converse or obverse position, and you can look at the cops and go, hey, I'll cut you a deal. I'll give you the big guy and 10 other names.
Yeah. Yeah. For all 17 of these cards, I'll give them all up. Yep. Okay, next question. We used to talk a lot about civil forfeiture, where various police agencies would confiscate money for no good reason. Has this become a thing of the past, or does it still continue?
It has not become a thing of the past. The same way gamblers will take a shot, the governments will take a shot. If you're found with 100 grand in your trunk, even if you want it legitimately, at an Indian casino and you're driving home across Arizona and the Arizona Highway Patrol pulls you over and finds that $100,000, that and everything in your wallet and the change in your ashtray are probably going to be taken.
Actually, I thought Arizona just recently passed a law prohibiting that they would no longer confiscate money without a conviction of something.
Well, that may be the case, and certainly that has been a trend in public outcry, but it hasn't worked everywhere. You tell me it has happened in Arizona. I apologize for not knowing that, if that's the case, but certainly a police officer in most of these jurisdictions, if they can, are going to err on the side of, not err, they're just going to put their a bird in the hand. They're taking the money. Yeah. Unless somebody has told them they literally can't, after this 3 decades of thinking that they can, they're still grabbing it wherever they can. I don't see, we've been through this before. There are various ways you can protect yourself. Certainly leave the casino with your win report. If you're not playing anonymously, to show to the cop, is that going to cause them to not take your money? Not likely. Is it going to give you something strong to get your money back? Likely. Excuse me. But carrying around a lot of money is an invitation to anybody who knows you have it, and that includes the government authorities.
All right. Next question. Someone wants a solid clarification about the legality or illegality of silver mining, meaning collecting credits abandoned by casino patrons.
Okay. I must have missed that question. You got to explain the program a little more to me.
Explain what's going on?
Yes.
Somebody sees a slot machine or a video poker machine, and it has $20 worth of credits on it, and they sit down, play a hand, and then cash out.
Okay, that machine was abandoned?
Yes.
Okay. If the machine was truly abandoned, I would suggest that the person who plays a hand and cashes out, or merely hits cash out, has committed no crime. They may get 86 from the casino. The casino can 86 them for that. But if the casino takes that money, I believe they're stealing. The case you would cite is one that you guys know. It's Romanski versus Detroit Entertainment with the lady with the nickel. And that case would probably be the lead case nationally, and I don't know anything that says the Nevada law is different, which is abandoned property belongs to the person who secures it. That's number one. And number two, if abandoned property is abandoned on the property of another, but it's recovered by someone who is on that property with permission, their securing of the abandoned property is superior to the property owner's claim in that property. So applying the common law across the board, what you call silver mining is fine.
So a couple of things. One, I'm pretty sure that Colorado specifically has passed laws against this, because I remember reading an article about a guy who got arrested and charged for doing this. So I think this can vary by state.
That's why anything can vary by state. That's why I cited the lead case of Romanski and its analysis. I certainly can't speak to – I did speak to Nevada because I haven't seen anything that takes us off of – I don't know of a statute here that would default that money to the casino. It's abandoned money. But certainly various states can have idiosyncratic statutes that apply to these circumstances.
While we're on this subject, we had some related questions to this. One of them was, if you see a $20 bill on the floor, is that the same thing? Or what if it's, say, a chip? Is that the same as if it was in a slot machine?
The answer to both questions would be yes. The other answer is, again, under their general aversion to what would be called slot walking, the casino will likely, 86, the person who exercises their right to recover abandoned property on the property of a casino. As to the chip itself, that is the property of the casino by law in Nevada, but that's only part of the question. The next part of the question is who's entitled to possession. And possession is the important question. And unless the casino can show a law that says that you have to give them back their chip, and I don't think one exists, you continue to be entitled to possess it. I just shrugged my shoulder with, what else do you want, Richard?
No, yeah.
Okay. Very good. If you're shrugging your shoulder, we're going to the next question.
Well, I will add something there. The Nevada Gaming Control Board and its personnel rely on this statement in the law that the chip is the property of the casino to look at circumstances like this and say that a patron has no rights in a chip. They've used it to say, for example, that the casino can hold the chips once they're prevented from being cashed and they don't have to return them. I have argued and supported and succeeded twice now in having the courts recognize that the issue is possession, not ownership, and that they wrongfully took the property from the gambler when the property was a chip.
Our next question involves Caesars and the World Series of Poker, and that an attorney's fees if a player sues Caesars. And apparently players believe it is one-sided, saying if the players lose, they have to pay their own expenses, but they don't say anything about if Caesars loses the argument. Is this legal?
The common law says that the contract governs, and even an adhesion contract, the terms govern. And in that context, it would be legal.
I'm sorry, Bob, you didn't say what the question was. All you said was it was about Caesars and the World Series of Poker.
I got the question. I'll restate it. The question is, if you've entered into a contract with somebody and it says, and that contract says if you lose in your lawsuit, you have to pay our attorney's fees, but it does not say if we lose, we have to pay yours.
Oh.
Okay? So in that case, is that enforceable? And the answer is, at common law, absolutely. there is a trend, and there are indications in that trend across the country that those terms must have mutuality. I believe it's in the insurance contract area that Nevada has said that they're void absent mutuality. There's two alternatives there. They can be void absent mutuality, or they can be enforceable by both people in order to assure mutuality. My personal take is that you can contract for anything you want, and the words mean what they say. But they find, you know what, I'll say outright that in Nevada, there are indications that that contract would be looked at as something that they call unconscionable and therefore would not be enforced. So right now, I think you can escape having to pay Caesar's attorney's fees if it's one-sided, but you are going to have a hard time compelling Caesar's to pay your attorney's fees, because the other side of that transaction, which would require mutuality, never came to fruition.
Okay. Next question. Under what circumstances can casino agents search a player's room uninvited despite a do not disturb sign on the door?
They can do it for the safety and protection of the hotel and its guests. If they're doing it to find, to research criminality by the guests that they are suspecting, or things that don't have to do with the immediate safety of other guests or their purse or their property, that's verboten. An example I can give is if they think, for example, that the AP staying in room 3204 has illegitimately taken away $150,000 from the tables, they can't break into the room to recover that. They can't break it. So there are limits, but there are exceptions. Call the exceptions exigent circumstances, but don't go into the room unless you have, or they should not go into the room unless they have permission or they have to protect the safety and well-being of other guests. So, is there a trend here or what have you, or something to look at in light of what the casinos are doing with me? Everything goes back to Route 91. They are insufferable in their position that they can do any and everything to prevent another mass shooting from the 14th floor of the Suncoast or what have you. And the courts to this point have not been too receptive to that, but I don't have, you know, I am personally coming up against it where they're saying, oh yeah, you're going to get a jury verdict from people where we're going to be saying all we're doing is protecting the other guests. Well, no, you weren't. You were stealing back my client's money. Yeah, good luck with that, they say. I'm willing to take those on, and I'll take them on as they come up. But emergencies have become much more explainable or broader since, in the way they're approached, since the October 1st thing.
Very good. We're now going to take a brief commercial break, and we will return to talking to Bob Nersessian and as he answers your questions. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In March, there's a $500,000 swipe, spin, and win promotion. You spin once a day by earning 500 points through any video poker or slot machines Monday through Thursday, 3 a.m. through 11 p.m. While you only have to play 500 points, players who wish to receive mailers down the road will play more when they come in to pick up this promotion. There are more food options at the South Point now. The buffet is now open for breakfast on weekdays and stays open until 9 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. Also, the newly remodeled Big Sur Oyster Bar is now open after being closed for an entire year. At predicted.org, there's a market where you can play small bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. The current markets deal with how many votes various people are going to get as they go through Senate confirmation, who is going to enter which race in 22 or 24. Listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predicted.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Stack the Deck. This is a 7 coins per line game where you, on the dealt hands of trips, quads, full houses, and four to the royal, you receive from 3 to 5 extra cards of the exact card need to make up your hand. That is, if you're dealt 3-3-3-6-6, and instead of having the one extra 3 to make the quads you draw to, you now have 6 threes out of the 52 cards, giving you plenty of chances for quads, quints, and quads with a kicker. They have extra pay schedules, categories of a baby royal, meaning 9 through king, suited, and 5 of a kind. Since the game is fixed as a 7-coin game, sometimes they have to change the pay schedules to make the game within acceptable limits. That is, 9-6-4 double-double bonus becomes 10-7-5, which requires a considerable number of strategy changes to play appropriately. All right, we are now returning to Bob Nersessian.
Hi. I have elected to stand through the rest of the show.
All right. Are your shoes squeaky? Somebody had some casino comp points that are good for 6 months if no gaming activity. And a casino zeroed out the comp points 1 day shy of 6 months. And the player contends this is an error. The question, is this something for the gaming commission? How does the player get these comps back?
Okay. First answer is to clear up a misnomer that people talk about. In Nevada, this would be a question for the gaming control board. The commission is an entirely different body. And you would do it by filing reporting a patron dispute to the Nevada Gaming Control Board. You would start that by calling up the enforcement division if you're in Las Vegas at the 555 East Washington building. And that's online. Ask for enforcement. You'll talk to an agent. You'll tell them what's up. The agent will investigate and within 30 days answer whether or not, in his opinion, you're entitled to recoupment or what the result should be. If you disagree with the agent, you can take it up to a hearing examiner, and after that, to the district court, and after that, to the Nevada Supreme Court. I will say that there are strong indications that the agent and the board and even the district court are going to strongly favor a decision in the casinos, from the casino's perspective. I've seen that from what I feel is experience, but They have also issued, I've gotten decisions from hearing examiners and from agents that are in favor of the board. And that is the process through which you have this decided. There is an argument that you could literally bring a lawsuit on it because to disallow that would be a violation of the Nevada's constitutional right to a trial by jury. But so far the courts, including the Nevada Supreme Court, in an unpublished decision, have rejected that. So really your only course is to report this to an agent and of the Gaming Control Board, and have the agent investigate it and issue his written decision, which he's statutorily required to do.
Just from a practical standpoint, I just want to say that this would be after you go talk to the casino itself, because I have heard of situations where a person went more than 6 months, and then they went to the booth and said, hey, I haven't been here, but my points were taken away, and they've reinstated the points. So at least take a shot at talking to the casino, especially given COVID for the last year, where people didn't want to go out to casinos. So at least exhaust those options before having to call gaming.
I don't disagree at all, Richard. You should always try to solve it through the casino first. And if you have a host, certainly work that host. I think it mostly comes down to whether or not you convince the casino that in the long run they're better off keeping what they have just taken from you, or keeping you a happy customer and regaining your play and recouping even more later. With that being said, I have plenty of circumstances where big players have asked to cash expired sportsbook tickets, and the casino says yes. But on the obverse, I've seen the exact opposite as well, where the casino says no. It says very clearly on the back, it's good for X, and you're here during Y. So that's our money, not yours. Interestingly, just to throw out a little weird thing, if they do say that's our money, not yours, I would suggest that if you want to get back at that casino, a nice thing to do if it's enough money is report to the state of Nevada treasurer that it seems that the casino is holding money that should be escheated to the state, and they're not telling you guys, and maybe you should look at them.
Yeah, I would also say, I just lost my train of thought. Sorry.
I'm sorry I talked so long.
No, it's okay. Oh, I know what I was going to say. I hear these stories where people allow thousands and thousands of dollars in points to accumulate, and I just don't see any reason for that. I mean, we all know that occasionally casinos will just steal your money. So why give them that opportunity and let those, points accumulate that much?
Yeah, well, there are sometimes reasons to let points. These are comp points, so there can be reasons to let them accumulate.
Well, yes, but for example, in your case, Bob, where you know that the South Point is not going to steal your money, but for a random advantage player at some other casino where they very well could steal your money, I don't see any reason for letting them accumulate.
Okay, you're talking about a difference between free play money and comp money.
Yes, I am talking about free play, yeah.
Because this question was about comp dollars.
Gotcha.
All right, let's change subjects. Is communicating with someone in the casino via a phone call a violation of the device law?
It depends on what you're doing with it. Certainly, if you are using that phone call to give you an example. If you have somebody off the table and they're keeping a running count and they're calling the player to tell them what it is, that's an outright violation and you're guilty. If you are calling them if you're using it to track or gain an advantage, there's a very strong argument that it's a violation of the device law. The opportunity to say that it is not a violation is that the telephone was not constructed for that purpose, and therefore it doesn't fall within the device law. I think that strategy will lose when it does come up. That is, when you read the statute, a viable defense, because the statute requires that items that it can be read to say that items that have an ordinary use unrelated to gaining an advantage at gambling, and that use is ubiquitous, cannot violate the gaming device law. So a phone would fall into that.
But to know actually what you were communicating, they would have to intercept that phone call somehow.
Not necessarily. They watch four calls and they see a move after every one. They can sequence that, and there's certainly circumstantial evidence that you're using the device to cheat.
So you may win the case. You may win the case, but you also may get arrested and spend some time in jail.
There's always that one, too, and I harp on that, and nobody seems to take notice of it. Thank you for noticing that, Richard.
Yeah. Are casinos required to cash out expired slot tickets?
No. But as I alluded to a few minutes ago, they may be required to take the money that's represented by that slot ticket and turn it over to the state of Nevada as escheated property. Do we know what the word escheat means, or should I explain that?
Well, explanation would be good. It has to do with turning over to the state, but a more precise definition would be useful.
Okay. When in commerce somebody comes into possession of property that belongs to someone else, either through latches, which is delay, or just because they can't find the person it belongs to, etc., there are laws that say that you, the person who came into possession of that interest, are not allowed to benefit from it because that's somebody else's interest that can't be redeemed. And under these laws, the entity that has had that happen is required to turn over that interest to the state. When you go look at the unclaimed property lists on the online, and many people are always checking, and hell, I just found I think $570 that I didn't know existed that I sent in a letter and it was returned to me. But those lists are made up of property that has been escheated to the state. Not everything that is escheated can still be redeemed, i.e. the slot tickets, but I think there is a requirement that that interest be turned over to the state and go into its general fund. How did I get my $560 or whatever it was, by the way? From shopping at Albertsons when my kids were going to a certain school and there was a rewards program. If you put in a PIN code for that, for the purchases at Albertsons, and my kids were there for 8 years and we never redeemed anything, but we always put in the PIN because there was a match to the school and that's what we were worried about or helping. And, Albertsons turned that money over to the state, and the state published a thing that says, we're looking for Bob Nersessian.
Wow. one of our, we have this recommended at the end of the show, and I had recommended that website, the state website that you can go to claim unclaimed property. So, yeah, I've gotten money out of there too. So we'll put that link in the show notes of this episode.
Yeah, I have too. When I moved property, sometimes if you get a letter 3 years after you've moved, it's no longer being forwarded, and it can happen that way. All right. Are slot tickets in general required to be cashed, even if they suspect you're an advantage player?
I don't understand the question. Oh.
Well, can casinos refuse to cash
the slot ticket? The slot ticket.
In Nevada. In an Indian casino, good luck.
Well, in an Indian casino, you'd still be able to go into Indian court. Okay, good luck.
So are slot tickets in general the same as chips, or are they somehow different?
Oh, didn't go that far. Let's see. Are they the same as chips? They are somehow different.
Can you expand on that a bit?
Well, one thing, I can go home, give them to my wife, and she can walk up to a, into a, up to a redemption machine, and they'll spit out cash.
Yes. Without,
you know, that's a difference. Other differences, the slot ticket is not owned by the casino, I don't believe. I believe it's owned by the person who has it in their half little hands. And it's paper and the other's clay? No, they're not the same.
But in terms of casinos must redeem them for patrons, would those rules be the same?
Hold on, let me work that out in my head for a second. I'd have to research that. Chips and tokens say that you have to be a patron. I imagine that it probably says the same thing for slot tickets, but it doesn't say you have to be a patron. It what it actually says is they have to know that you are not a patron. So if I'm using slot tickets as cash and somebody I buy dinner with by giving them a slot ticket goes into the casino and they're not otherwise a patron of that casino and they try to cash the slot ticket, the casino could legitimately say, no, give it back to the guy who earned it. We'll cash his, but we can't deal with that for you. You've never gambled here.
But it would be hard for them to know that.
Well, it would be almost impossible for them to know that, but that's still the requirement they have to meet. Know or should know that the person is not a patron is the standard.
Okay.
Different Which question. Also requires then that the person not be a patron in order to cash the, in order to withhold the cashing of the slip. But, I have not seen a casino. I've seen casinos try to withhold from advantage gamblers cashing slot tickets, but I have not seen one where that succeeded if the gambler actually won the slot ticket. They'll usually say things like you have to show ID or something like that, which then the advantage gambler says, no, you don't get my name. It's a true statement. Had clients fight it successfully. Had clients find themselves in jail and then get tens upon tens upon tens of thousands of dollars for the false arrest when the police back up the casino and arrest that guy for not showing his ID. By the way, he was 28.
Next question. How is it legal for the same sports book to take a $2,000 bet from one person and will only take a $22 bet from someone else on the exact same bet?
Why isn't it legal? I know answering a question with a question is a pretty crummy way to deal with something like this, but if I walk up to you, Bob, and I say, I want to buy that shirt off your back, I'll give you $100 for it, and you say, no, I don't like you, Bob Nersessian. And then Richard says, well, I'll give you $100 for it. And you take your shirt and you hand it to Richard and he gives you $100. Anything wrong with that?
Well, I'd take $100. I'm wearing a sweatshirt now. I'll take $100 from anybody who gives it to me. Yeah, but okay.
But you see, you can deal with anyone you want on any terms you want as long as it's not discriminatory on the basis of, and y'all know the list, gender, national origin, religion, etc. If it's just because I hate your guts or I don't want your business, they don't have to enter into an agreement with you.
But you don't have to state the reason. In other words, no. if for some reason I discriminated against people with Armenian origins, and I thought you fell into that category, and so that was the reason, but as long as I don't state it, I can do it. Is that right?
Oh, that's not true. You're breaking the law.
Right, but so now, yes, trying to prove that that's the reason is a whole nother story, but that doesn't really apply to gamblers, I think, so.
Especially APs, because they know the reason. They're being discriminated against because they hold an edge on the casino. You guys are gamblers.
Yeah, but that's not a protected category. National origin is.
In what?
Being an AP is not a protected category.
Exactly.
But national origin is, perhaps.
Yeah.
But as long as I don't state what the reason is,
then it would be hard to prove. But why do we care about that case, Bob?
I don't know. I'm still trying to sell my shirt for $100, I think. Yeah. All right, last question.
7.
If a sports book says, I have to show a player's card or they won't pay a slot ticket or a sports book ticket, is that legal?
Generally, no. Actually, if their whole thing is to require you to either start an account or disclose your identification, the answer is definitely no. They can't refuse. Why can they refuse? If they have a contract with you on the front side that says you will provide X, Y, and Z in order to cash a ticket, and you agree to that, maybe. But without that, the answer is just no. They can't say no. Because they want to know who you are.
In Nevada.
Pretty much anywhere, and I'll tell you exactly why. Wagering is a contract, right?
Yep.
And as a contract, is your name material to that contract? No. Moving forward. That contract has already not only been entered into without requiring your name, it has been performed. What is the duty to close out a contract that has been performed? It is merely to settle up. That is their only obligation, and your duty to get them to settle up is to present the terms of the contract, be that a slot ticket or the chips. This whole other idea that somehow they have to get your ID especially if there's not a FinCEN involvement, is just contrived by the casinos in order to track advantage gamblers. However, as I say this, understand, and I have taken the deposition of the deputy chief or the senior agent at the Gaming Control Board, and he had sworn that you have to give up your ID in this deposition. And then I said, didn't Nevada actually repeal the ID section of their Gaming Control Board regulations? And he said, yes. So what law makes them have to give up their ID? He goes, that's just how we look at it. You're looking at it wrong. Stop being a shill for the casinos. Start being what you are, a consumer protection officer, and help out the gambler for a change, because that's what they're supposed to do.
Oh, I bet he loved you for that.
Oh, they hate me over there. You know that.
And with good reasons. And so we have good news and bad news. The bad news is we're out of time. The good news is we have lots more questions for Bob Nersessian, which means he's going to be back again in the relatively near future, for which we're always anxious because we learn a lot when he shows up. So if your question wasn't answered today, send it to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or Richard's Twitter account or to Richard or me individually, and we'll make sure it gets on the list.
And I'll apologize for the fact that with what you just said, Bob, so much of what you asked me, the answer is we don't know.
Well, that's always going to be the case. And it can be expensive to find out sometimes.
Yes, again. Thanks so much for having me.
It is our pleasure. At the end of the show, Richard and I, and sometimes our guests, offer a recommended. Richard, do you have a recommended for us today?
Yeah, I just watched a new series on Netflix that I really liked. It was called Hache, H-A-C-H-E. It's set in 1960 in Barcelona and about the heroin trade. And it was really good. So there's two seasons of it. I highly recommend it.
And I'm actually watching an old Netflix one, and Bonnie and I are watching it together. It's called Last Tango in Halifax. And it's about these two people who get together. Both had been married for 50 years to somebody else, but had a connection, but way back when. And so they get married and they have family and stuff with, they have different forms of dysfunctional families. And we find it quite interesting. You may need to be a senior citizen to really enjoy it, but we are, and we do.
Do I get a shot?
You certainly do.
I don't really need one, but I'll just say, if you've been looking at really thick books sitting around somewhere for the last 30 years, for example, The Source by Michener or Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, bite the bullet and read them. That's it.
Yeah. Usually books in my house are books I already read. I really don't have many that are there that I didn't read yet, because once I get them, I usually read them.
I understand, but how many people do you know that look at a 1,011 page book, I think that's Atlas Shrugged's paperback edition, read six pages and go, this print is too darn small.
So you get the large print version, and then it's 2,000 pages.
Right.
It's actually two volumes.
All right. So thank you, Bob Nersessian. This is always fun to have you on, always informative. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.